Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidyavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, page 12. The methods of active and passive hostility. 1. Those methods that are adopted for the practice of active hostility to the Absolute are termed pratyaksha, direct individual sense perception, and paroksha, associated collective sense perception by many persons past and present. The aparoksha method, the method of cessation from individual and collective sense perception, leads to the position of neutrality. The pratyaksha and paroksha methods are diametrically opposed to the methods approved by the Bhagavat for the search of the truth. Right? Because you're always starting with shabda. Why these are opposed is because you're not starting with shabda. You're starting with what you see. Or paroksha, what others see, and you together, all that kind of, you know, who sees now, who sees in the past. You know, in other words, you're referring to materialists of the present or the past. So like getting things off the internet, what's the latest news, what's going around, what you read in magazines, that's paroksha. You know, what you've heard from others. You know, your friends. You know, what you've heard from the everyone. You know, those few friends. You know, that group.
So now this is considered demoniac.
It's because it's active and passive hostility because you are not... it's not about the Lord. You're not starting with the Lord. So, aparoksha, then you're not dealing with the individual and the collective, it's just the experience that's happening. Yes. So it's not being perceived, but it's being experienced. Yes. You know, just like the example was given of the, when you're sleeping at night, you're not aware, but if I ask, how did you sleep, you can say. Yes. That's aparoksha. Yes. So it's not coming from your sense perception, it's not coming from others. So that's the passive, that's why it says it's neutral. So, you know, just going by that feeling or that this or that, you know, those kinds. Because people do things as feelings. They don't like, you know, something because of their feelings. You know, some there was some vibe there, you know. Or these ones where directly they themselves, their perception or others' perception. But you're starting just with yourself. You're not starting with the Lord. That's why it's considered hostile to the Lord. Because the Lord then has to fit into yours and others' perception. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that automatically means those that start by this method and all that, then they are hostile to the Lord. So you generally see the scientific community, because they start with this pratyaksha, or the, you know, let's say the politically correct community, or just, you know, just people that in general, they just hear from others, you know, the new agey, their feelings, you know, like, so it's not about the Lord. Now, if the Lord fits into this, they go to good feeling, someone said it's a nice thing, they perceive something that they consider themselves nice, then it may be okay. You know what I'm saying? But that, the whole point is it's about yourself. So it's hostile to the Lord. It's not about the Lord. Because when you're dealing with a theism, you're talking about, it starts with Shastra, or Shabda. That's the difference between the theistic moralism and the atheistic moralism. Theistic moralism, you start with Shastra, with authority. Then you apply what they say. The Shastra says this is what you should do. Atheistic means you just start with yourself or the group. You know, the communal, the associated collective sense perception. And from that, then you define your moral principles. Is that so? That's the difficulty that comes. The Aparoksha method also tends to an unwholesome and negative result if it seeks to stand on the mere rejection of the Pratyaksha and Paroksha methods without trying to progress towards the positive transcendence. So in other words, the Aparoksha means where the Lord's descended into everything, seeing the Brahman, but you're not interested in going towards the Lord. You're just interested in getting out of the material world. That is also, it's unwholesome and negative. It's not exactly against the Lord, because you're acknowledging how Brahman is the connection, but it's not about the person. Such inactive policy would indeed be tantamount to the practice of passive hostility to the Absolute, and as such is even more condemnable than open hostility. Because you present as if you're very spiritual and this and that. You'll talk about the Lord and this, but you're not actually into it. The other ones, it's obvious. So if you could convince an atheist, then they'd be a theist. But these persons present themselves as if they appear to be theistic, but they're not. Right. Sorry?
Mayavadis fall into that category?
Yes, Mayavadis. This would be the Mayavadis. And the other was the aparoksha will be just those feelings. There's some aspects, but it's all about their feelings. So they get a good feeling, that's why they go to church or something. Not that it's about the Lord and it's the duty and sense of gratitude and those kind of things. Because if something goes wrong, then they stop going. You know, some bad experience is there, they stop because it's about their experience. Five, no method can be recognized as suitable for the quest of the truth that is actuated more or less by the purpose of opposing the absolute supremacy of Sri Krishna. You can say, oh, but it's not about that. You know, we accept, but the point is, the premise is you accept as long as it's acceptable to you. So those parts that I accept, and those parts that I don't.
Right?
Yes.
We see that it's quite popular even among the devotees.
Yes, that's why it's listed here. So these are the things that devotees have to be aware of. You know, one for themselves and who they associate with, but also so that you can discuss with others about it, what's the position and what's the actual. Because if you're establishing that religious principles are for developing love of God, right, that's what the Vedas are talking about, then that's what you're trying to establish when you're discussing with persons. So here he's discussing with someone who has, you know, basically you're taking from the position that they have no interest in the Vedic culture. You know, it's like the modern culture. And they at least identify themselves as intelligent. You know, educated, intelligent, you know, modern, like this. And so then he's going through all the methods, but he's just presenting the different aspects of the Vedic frameworks, but he's just using contemporary wordings to explain them. But he's always just using Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. In this one he's using the five levels of perception, like that. Other times he uses the levels of consciousness. So he's always using the Vedic formulas. Just he's using language and examples that they'll appreciate. Does that make sense? So that's the specialness of it. That's then applying the preaching, because of the compassion for the others, the ability to appreciate that if there's only Krishna, like, it means if we look at it, because some may say, oh, but it's a compromise if you see some things in what they're doing. Because it's either you accept compromise or you don't. Right? There doesn't seem to be any other alternative. Other than you just don't care. Then that's there. Right? So, but the point is if everything's Krishna, right, and you're supposed to do things in connection to Krishna, then what you're looking for is those aspects that are connected. And those that are not, then how to connect those. Right? Because if we're seeing that it's Krishna, then stuff that's connected, why would you oppose that? Right? But because Krishna is the principal element, then you're having to look at things from that principal perspective to see that. Does that make sense? You know, so, like we were saying, the worship of the demigod, then the aspect that is correct is that they're approaching the scriptures, they're approaching guru, they're using some process, some sadhana, like that, and they're trying to, you know, please the demigod through the recommended methods, or at least how they're understanding it. So all that is good in that it's the proper process, it's just the wrong goal. So you have to just adjust that. Does that make sense? You know. So that's the from that then you can see what is useful. So in the same way as then you go into anything that you're dealing with is what's the principle behind someone's doing something? What's their actual purpose? And then based on that, because values are always why people work. Values are actually Krishna. People don't attribute them to Krishna, but that's actually... So if you can understand the value, understand, and if there's any proper methods, then that's where you start building from. Right? Because, you know, if you want to build something, you start from somewhere. Right? You know, say you want to... get anything done. You first see what you have. And then from there you go. And if there's absolutely nothing, okay, then... You know it's from there, and then you start. But if there's something, then you'll start from there. So that's the technique. So, yeah. So the point is if it's about yourself, it is an opposition to the Lord. So now if you are doing things that are appropriate and are bona fide, and this, it just means it's mixed. So you want to be able to identify the mixed part and what's the pure part, and cultivate the pure, and try to engage or remove the, or ignore the mixed part. Is that, yeah. In other words, individual souls cannot realize the subjective nature of the Absolute except by the exercise of their fullest subservience to Sri Krishna and His inner power, internal energy. Right? Because His subjective nature means He is a person. Because when we say personal, it means it's how Krishna sees it. Right? But when we are looking at these other things are our own subjective. Right? So we're taking that as the main platform. What I perceive, how I perceive it, what others perceive that I value their opinion and like this. Or even just the feelings that are there and I'm not really, I'm experiencing them but I'm not actually focusing on them. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, just again, the kirtan. The kirtan's going nice, you're appreciating it. But as soon as you focus on it, then it's not approaching. Now it's gone into the sense perception. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, means from our nature, it's subservience. Then we can appreciate Krishna's subjective nature. Otherwise, if we're focused on our subjective nature, then we're going to look at Krishna from the, you know, supposedly objective, like science. Everything else is objective, but their method of approaching all that is subjective. But if you say that to them, they'll ferociously deny that and get very upset. But it's simply you're using your senses, you're seeing it, you're interpreting it. How is that objective? You know what I'm saying? So the point is everyone's going to be objective, so we take, subjective, so we take our subjectivity and apply it in subservience to Krishna. Then we can understand Krishna as a person. Because it's why does Krishna do things? That's what we're seeing. He says, well, I don't like this, but why is Krishna doing it like that? It's that we don't care. So that's the hostility towards Krishna. Okay. Why can't Krishna do it like this? Yes.
So can we say that subjective nature of Krishna, it's a manifestation of his personality.
Yes. Because subjective, you take it as your personal opinion. An objective means that you're looking at it without any opinion.
Yeah.
Without yourself being involved.
Right.
But at the same time, a serious difficulty here is because they only accept information that's been gathered directly through the senses, which is purely subjective.
Yeah.
So they're basing the academic method of objectivity on a pure system of subjectivity.
Right.
And then saying that's science.
But it also confuses devotees in many cases, because Krishna is an object and a subject simultaneously.
Because he's everything.
Exactly. So when we shift those positions, like yesterday you were reading.
Yes.
The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu. And then he's a subject and he's an object as well. So when it shifts, then...
But the point is, subject is what it's about.
Right.
An object is what it's directed towards.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's not contradictory. It's just two different flavors.
Yeah. Because we want to fix either subject or object. We can't deal with both, actually. It's very difficult.
So therefore, it should be just rice and never any other grain under any circumstance whatsoever.
That's right? A Bengali version, I guess.
But I'm saying whatever you take, as soon as you fix it in that, then it won't work. You know, because bread's baked, right?
Yeah.
Dry, like that. But pasta's not. So that means technically you couldn't eat pasta. If you eat bread, you can't eat pasta.
At the same time?
No, just ever. Because it has to be one thing that's fixed eternally. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty, is that it's just a matter of getting used to the different things. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, you can drive the car when the road is flat. Now what happens if it's a hill and you have to stop on the hill and then start again on the hill? You understand? But it's still the same kind of principle, but it's a different kind of application.
Right.
You know? Or you can drive and stop the car and go around the turns and all that, but then what about parallel parking? You know? You know, so you have all these things, you expand what you're able to deal with.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking within the rasa, it means our service is always directed at Krishna, so that way he's the object. So when we're talking about the aspect of subject and object, meaning the Lord and the devotee, we're talking about the relationship.
Right.
We're not talking about the direction of our service, because our service is always towards Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. The other one is the interaction, that it's about Krishna, but at the same time as it's Krishna will reciprocate based on the nature of the devotee. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because Krishna being the absolute truth and being rasa, that means all living entities directing their attention to Krishna as the object works. But now, how does Krishna reciprocate that? He reciprocates it by reciprocating through the medium that the devotee uses that is being used by the devotee to approach him. So that means then you have to take into consideration the ashray, the devotee.
Yeah.
So in that consideration, then Krishna is the subject, the devotee is the object.
Right.
You understand? So it's the devotee is seen as the object only when you're considering the reciprocation. When you're taking it about his position, his absolute position, and his nature, and therefore the nature, when you're looking at the tattva side of it, then he's the object. But when you're looking at the rasa side, he's the subject, and we're the object.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that way, it shouldn't be confusing. Yes?
All right. One devotee from this course sent a question related to this topic that she's not getting any more like the same taste she used to get from kirtans and even chanting and like that used to be. Could it be the thing that in the beginning it has been like just a goal to one sense enjoy, but it has been not moved to sambandha? Or could you a little elaborate?
No, it's just a matter of where's the consciousness. Because before, if you look, okay, if she looks at the point where before there was more of a taste, but how prominent was this in the life? The consideration. You know, what was the interesting things to do in life? And look at the situation now. What's the focus? What's the predominance? What are the interesting things or what are the important things? And then you may find that it's just that one is allowed oneself to get too involved in the day-to-day activities, so naturally then the other goes, you know, will be eclipsed. Right? But if you again focus on the direct activities, it goes back up. Six, the failure of individual souls to find the truth is brought about by their own innate perversity. They possess perfect freedom of choice as between complete subservience to Sri Krishna and the practice of active or passive hostility towards them. So these are our choices. You have free will. There's no other alternative open to them. If they choose to refuse to serve, they have to practice hostility or indifference towards the absolute truth. Right? So then it's either hostility within karma or that in indifference on the path of jnana. But it's also just another form of hostility.
Right.
It's also just a...
Where would atheists fit in?
They generally are quite active about there.
What's that? Active hostility?
Yeah, active. Because they would perceive, they would get from others, they would hang out with others who have that kind of mentality.
Mm.
They would profess it, they'd talk about it.
And if they don't care... You ask them, they say we don't believe, but otherwise they don't really care about God in their life. That's like the majority of the people.
Then that's just basically, that would be the aparoksha. You know, but when you're looking at it where the soul and all that and the spiritual, but you're not actually interested in Krishna, then you're indifferently hostile.
Wouldn't it be pratyaksha? If we say about five levels, the first one is pratyaksha.
Yes.
So it's the lowest level?
Yes. That's where you're just based on that, if you're trying to connect it across, that would be someone who doesn't have a moral system.
Oh, that's what I thought. Like when we connect it to anamaya, pranamaya.
Yes, no, but I'm saying you have the atheists, now they may work in groups or they may not. It just depends on that. So that would place them either... In the how you say that, pranamoy or manamoy platform. But we're talking about that next one, the aparoksha, they don't really think about it. There's a feeling, there's no feeling there. They don't catch anything, so they don't really care. You know, if they say, I don't believe, that's another thing. Then it may drop it down. But I'm just saying, it's just, you know, yeah, they're agnostic, so it's kind of neutral. So it's a passive hostility. Well, then the jnanis, it's like a further passive. They don't care for the lower levels, but they don't actually care for the absolute, the proper level. So it appears that they're spiritual or, you know, thinking of higher things, but they're still hostile to the Lord. But one would think, for the regular people, they're going to think that that this person is spiritual and worth, you know, following, has something to say, but actually they're still going to make, they're still hostile to the Lord. So you're thinking you're doing something moving forward, but actually you're not. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says better that they're, you know, obviously atheists. Because here they're atheists, but it's not obvious.
And there would be a proksha.
No, that's adhokshaja.
So that's the Vijnanamaya?
Yes.
Whereas there's another category in aparoksha, which is passive subservience, which will come up.
Passive subservience. Okay, it's another
that's
angle.
Like Brahmavadism.
Okay. Okay. Seven, the perverse individual soul is not obstructed in the active exercise of his freedom of choice. He is enabled to exercise the functions of hostility and indifference within consistent, deterring limits by the wonderful contrivance of the deluding power of Sri Krishna. So, Krishna never gets in the way of our freedom of choice. Right? What choice you make, then it will have certain results. So if you chose the subservience, then you move forward towards prema. You don't choose that, then all kinds of, you know, involvement in the cycle of samsara, of karma. Right? So we may say, no, but there's so many obstacles. That's just the application. But that you have your free will, that's never obstructed. 8. The continued deliberate exercise of hostility and indifference towards the absolute by the perverse individual soul results necessarily in the suicidal abdication of all activities by the deliberate offender. Right? So it'll eventually bring to the point of trying to merge into Brahman or voidism. It'll just take them to that suicidal abdication of all activity. It'll just end up there. And then when that doesn't give them any taste, then they'll be back with very great enthusiasm for sense gratification. Yeah. The methods of active and passive subservience. The methods that are adopted for practicing active and complete subservience to the absolute are termed respectively as adhoksaja, the external or reverential method of serving the transcendental object of worship, and aprakrita, the internal or confidential method of service of the absolute. Right, so it's adhoksaja is given another. Because adhoksaja, see, is that transcendental platform can be used by spiritualists, either in positive towards the Lord, or as we saw, negative, where it's not towards the Lord. Because it's the point where one is in the neutral state of, it's how you say, you're not on the material platform.
It's Brahma-bhuta.
Yes. Like that. So that you can see the difference would be, as Prabhu mentioned, the difference between the Brahmavadi and the Mayavadi. The Mayavadi would be negative. The Brahmavadi is just, it's external reverential worship. Okay. And a prakrita means then it's not of the material. It's purely transcendental, so it's about the person. 2. Srimad Bhagavatam inculcates and divulges the search of the absolute by the adhoksaja and aprakrita methods. It condemns the pratyaksha and paroksha methods, but recognizes the proper use of the aparoksha method, stylized as passive subservience. Okay, so it takes it down to there. Because, see, is that the Lord, he is in his natural transcendental position. And then he is everything, what we value, what everything's there in that, in the adhoksaja position. And he will extend down to aparoksha if you take those aspects as seeing their external connections to, their connections to the Lord. You know, like following Varnashram, but in connection to the Lord. That would be aparoksha. Mm-hmm. Right? But you have to connect it. He naturally is there, pervading everything as the actual working principle. He's the value, he's all those things within the material. So that's why then the Bhagavatam basically is talking about the, aprakrita and adhoksaja, like that. In other words, aprakrita is what you're trying to use, but adhoksaja is very valuable for getting ourselves situated on the transcendental platform. So if just by hearing about Krishna, we naturally, spontaneously attach ourselves there, you don't technically have to use the adhoksaja platform. Right? In other words, if just through bhakti, you situate yourself in bhakti, you don't really need to use jnana yoga. But if not, jnana yoga is used. But it can use karma yoga as the aparoksha, if you see it connected to Krishna. So just following Varnashram and not connecting it to Krishna, then that won't be that aspect. That's why you can see sometimes devotional service is discussed and it sounds attractive. Varnashram's discussed, it's attractive. Sometimes it's discussed and it's not. So generally it's a matter of, is Krishna involved in that? So it's actually Daiva Varnashram, or he's not. You understand? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the position is that it's a science. You see it there. Everything connects down. But it's that simple point. Always remember Krishna, never forget. Try to see everything connect to Krishna. Do everything for Krishna. All that's being described here is the analytical science of it, how it works. You know, it's just like plug in your toaster, it works. Now you ask an electric engineer, they could give you a 10-minute, you know, explanation of what's going on there. Right? So as long as you plug in your toaster, you're great. But if you think, I don't need to plug in the toaster, then maybe you need that 10-minute discussion to, you know, get you to understand that there's not enough electricity in the air, so it's not going to happen. You got to plug it in. Yes.
So this passive subservience of aparoksha, so these people who abide by the scriptures and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they have their own material gains also along with it.
Yes, so that'll be, you'll see it's there. Just like you could say, as an example, then someone brought it up the other day, is like daksha. He's worshiping the Lord, but it's in connection with his varnashram duties. But it's not so much that he's, at least, you know, from what we hear about his position, that it's about the eternal position of devotional service, but he understands the position of the Lord and therefore is committed to respecting and worshiping him as is recommended.
Would it be like regular smartas?
Regular smartas, not necessarily. I would put them in the hostile position. Because their idea is ultimately there is no person. Yeah. In the whole doctrine, he's a person, he's there, it's like that, but it's not, he's more worried about his karma. So he's performing devotional service, and that service rendered is respected. Therefore, the Hamsaguya prayers are one of the major prayers within the Bhagavatam. And so, by having that understanding, that mentality, but with the idea of ultimately pure devotion, using that method, it will get the pure devotion. Daksha, he got his position as facilities as a Prajapati to perform his duties. Right? I was looking at the labor. Just happened to coincide with the... So...
Can you say that Adhoksha Jaya is the beginning stage of devotional service and Aprakrita is advanced? Because it defines starting with the Das and then it becomes about the confidential method of service.
Means Aprakrita is the actual position. It's just that Krishna extends into these. But it's not that they themselves are devotional service. They're just positions. It's like saying, is the deity room devotional service? You know, it's that room is where the situation in which you can perform, you know, because the deity's there and you're accepting and approaching the Lord. But it's not about the room. So these are just positions.
Like that.
Right, so just as adhoksaja and paroksha are both considered, passive. So they can be either passive hostility or passive subservience. But we see is that the pratyaksha and paroksha, they're always categorized in the hostile position. Therefore, you find it, you know, just as we said, those who talk varnashram, some of it is attractive or appreciated, and sometimes it's not. But even if it's not, you know it's technically externally correct. You understand? Though it's not presented in a way that is attractive for devotional practice. You know, using it as a value in your life, right? But when devotees talk from the position of pratyaksha and paroksha, just what they've heard, what's the modern things going on and the political correctness, that's just not devotional service. And so it takes on a political flavor, a whole different direction. Though they are devotees and value and they do devotional service. So it's really that's why it's recommended that you start, you practice religion at the position of human life. which means accepting the Shastra, accepting Varnashram, and functioning from there and moving forward. So in other words, the Aparoksha is where you would start from. If you're using Paroksha and Pratyaksha only, you know, or predominantly, or in certain areas, then those areas are going to be very weak because you're not starting with authority, you're not starting with the Lord. So whatever it is that you say about, no, but it's good if everyone's nice and all that and we behave ourselves and deal and care about each other. But the point is what's the purpose of that? Okay, if everyone cares for each other, then, oh, but it'll be such a nice wonder. Wouldn't it be such an inspiring environment to perform devotional service? But what's inspiring about it? You understand? The inspirational aspect is that I will feel materially comfortable. And then being materially comfortable, now I'm willing to be considerate of the spiritual position. Right? But if you look at it in reality, is that why did we come to take up the spiritual position in the first place? Because our material situation was so wonderful, and therefore we had the, you know, that we were gracious enough to apply ourselves to, no, because it wasn't nice. So therefore, are saying, no, if everybody just works together and all that, not that it's not a good point, because it's mentioned how the Vaishnavas, they respect all living entities. But that's based on, it's about Krishna. The living entities are connected to Krishna. That's why you're dealing with them in that way. But otherwise, then it's that you're trying to fulfill one's own desires, that I want to be in this wonderful, loving environment where everybody's so nice, even though I may be a rat bag and have bad days, but everybody else is so nice, they never get disturbed by it. And they're consistently like that. In other words, they never do anything wrong. Only I'm allowed to do things wrong. And so in that environment, I'll feel good. And so I wanted that before. Materially, I didn't get it. I took up the religious process, and of course, religion is for gaining material benefits. So I expect that this Hare Krishna movement is going to give me that also. You understand? So we're dealing with our material attachments. So that's why, for those who resonate with those qualities, it sounds very good. But if you analyze it, it's not devotional at all. But that they're looking for good qualities and all that, by the devotional process, since the devotee has all good qualities and all that, it's a natural position. But the problem is so them wanting that, in one sense, is not wrong, because it's the nature of the soul. But the mistake is being made is they think it will happen on the material platform by material endeavor. Or that it will happen by material endeavor and it will be spiritual. But what's missed is that only by devotional service will this come about. And only by following the culture given by Krishna that it will come about. So in other words, following the Vedic culture, that religious process, that's where you can express these things. But the purification of function on that platform is only going to happen by devotional service. So there isn't any other method. You understand? So that's why these other things, they sound bewildering. Right? So the one is inspiring. Or, you know, in other words, all three we're talking about seemingly religious positions. One, it's inspiring. One, it's right, but, you know, it's a little bit, you know, the attitude is not necessarily appreciated. The other one, it sounds nice, but it's really, it doesn't give the right perspective. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I have to acknowledge that though the prophet is this kind of thing that if everything is nice, and they are also in a mood to do it, so they put so much endeavor in doing that, after they accomplish whatever little they feel they have accomplished, they're tired of even devotional service. Like,
yeah, because it all goes together. Because devotional service should, means in other words, religion means that there'll be prosperity. And so therefore, since material prosperity is not sustainable. Right? Even, you know, if you follow Jaimini, it's still, you're going to die, be born. All these things are still going to happen. So then, the difficulty will come, you'll become tired. And because you're relating it with devotional service, therefore, like you said, they'll become tired of everything. Because they're seeing Krishna consciousness simply as religion, not as sad dharma. Because Sadharma is about, the effect of Sadharma is prema. But this other, the effect of religion is material facility or liberation. Right? And generally those interested in liberation don't make a scene about it. They just avoid everybody. You know, they're negative, they're skeptic about everything. But those who are positive, and yes, we can do, and bring it all together, then the things no one else is trying, no one else, only I'm working so hard, and that's because you're the it's your idea, and you're trying to fulfill your idea. What about, you know, if we're saying community, why aren't you working with everybody else and trying to figure out what they're looking for? You know what I'm saying? But we're projecting our value on everybody else, and everybody else is not following that, therefore it's a problem. So that's the point, is it's subjectivity. So this subjectivity, not connected to Krishna, is the problem. So when we connect that subjectivity to Krishna's subjectivity, then we make our subjectivity subservient to his subjectivity, then it works. But when we think is that my subjectivity is going to make everything fabulous, so then, you know, everyone will be devotees. But, you know, since when, where does it say that our subjectivity is the one that's going to make it happen? So you know, so they're standard mistakes. That's why these five levels of consciousness and perception and all these things are used. These are main frameworks that are always used. That's the Manna Abhideya Prayojana, this, they're always used. So with that, then you can see what is, can always judge what's going on, where it fits, like that. And so you can see is that the difficulty is because it's at the wrong level. Right? Because it's the level of consciousness. It's not what you're doing, it's the level of consciousness. So as you raise the level of consciousness, the form, if it's a recommended form, it may stay as it is. If it's not a recommended form, you would adjust to a recommended form. Because the principle will be the same. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say you want to drink something. Okay? So, then let's say you have the sattvic form as you have a glass, and you drink and you don't touch it to your mouth. Okay? You're just considering that. The next down is you touch it to your mouth. Okay? Like that. But now let's say some people, in their enthusiasm, they put their drink in their shoe. Right? No? Never heard of that?
No.
Really?
Huh?
Yeah. Generally, it's
alcohol or what?
We just said drink. You can put it together however you like. But I'd say popularly it's what do you call it? Champagne. You know, if it's at an event, you know, some kind of sporting, then it's in your own shoe. And if you're at a party and it's mixed company, then it'll be in a stiletto. Does that make sense? You don't know what a stiletto is? You have two forms. One is you have this little thing like this, you push a button and a blade comes out. That's the stiletto. The other one is a pair of shoes that in the back they have one of those, you know, so it's risen so much in the back. Maybe you know them as high heels? Okay. They're also known as stilettos because they're so thin there. If they step on you, it makes a hole. Yes. No. So that reference didn't work. Okay. So
something good else. Sign.
Huh?
It's a good sign.
Yes, it's a good sign actually. So the point just that we're making here is as you raise the consciousness, you'll stop using shoes and stick to glasses.
Yes.
That's what we're meaning. But drinking will go on. You know, what goes in the vessel, you know, you might improve the quality of that, and the quality of the vessel, it improves. But you still, it's still about, you know, the drinking process goes on. So that's sometimes what's thought, is that, no, but it changes everything. It doesn't change. The principle always remains the same. You know, you're eating food, it's not, it's mode of ignorance, so then you eat, you know, what's, you eat prasad. So eating still goes on. Just those things, the mode of ignorance, are just left out of the equation. Mm-hmm. Sir?
Yeah.
Yes.
Maharaj, actually, we are supposed to work individually to increase the quality of consciousness, individually, and also collectively.
Yes, we do both.
Yeah.
Like I think Jiva Goswami, have you seen it in the Sandarbhas or something? He gives an explanation of Ghosti Anandi
mm-hmm.
as a group of Bhajan Anandis who work together to preach.
Yes.
Right? Have you come across it? So in other words, that's the uniqueness of the Vedic system, is that, let's say you go into the temple, and everybody's in the temple, right? But everybody's doing their own thing.
Yes.
And even if there's some kind of group thing going on, everybody's having their own direct relationship with their Lord.
Yes.
Right? But if you go in, let's say we go into other, houses of worship, everybody's doing exactly the same thing at the same time, and if you do something different, it's freaky.
Yes.
You know? And whether you're relating with, you know, who it is, because, you know, it depends on, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's not seen, it's just the external form. So that's the uniqueness of the Vedic system. It actually allows for individuality, but that individuality then has direction how all those individuals can work together collectively. That's what the etiquette's for. So all the things that the Western culture complains about that's restrictive are the things that allow for individuality and allow one to work together. You know what I'm saying? Because let's say you have an individuality. The point is that individuality is presented in an environment that naturally allows that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like we said, okay, the woman controls the man, okay? But it's in what environment?
Home.
It's in the home. In public, even though she does control, it's not seen. Right? So that's the etiquette, and then everybody else, it works very nicely. Does that make sense? But as soon as you want to bring that control into the public, then what's the right? You know what I'm saying? They'll claim we have rights, but the point is where's the obligation? You're not doing anything for those other persons, so why should they have that submission? Right? The service, their submission. Right? In other words, the Vedic system, you control through service. But here they want control, no service. And then that's said to be being liberal and broad. No, it's not at all. It's being very self-centered and very, very, inconsiderate. You know what I'm saying? So it has its natural place where it can be expressed. So the Vedic system, all these rasas are tasted in their natural place. And then where it's not their place, it's not done there. You know, even in the modern, you know, environment, if people are a bit too physically close, someone's going to comment, get a room. Right? That's not a Vedic aphorism, get a room. It's a modern, you know, that's come up just very recently, last, you know, 20 years, 30 years. Previous to that, you didn't have to say that. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the point is these things, there's a natural place for everything to be done. You know, just like I think it was, just to show an example of it, not, you know, it's strange, is that there was, I don't know what the group was, but it was some very big, you know, very famous band. Like that. You know, and between programs, you know, between shows, they would travel. You know, like that, because they would generally have so much stuff and all that, like I heard, I can't remember what it was. I think Pink Floyd or something had like 30 trucks of stuff, you know, to move. So, you know, and now they'll travel in something smaller. So they were going along once, and just for fun, they pulled into the petrol station. And I think somebody's filling up the petrol, but while that's going on, you know, since they're entertainers, then, you know, one got out, you know, with that, you know, that kind of like the suit, like the butler, and set up the little stand and a chair and everything like that, and started setting it up. And then the guy gets out dressed in all his frills and all that and sits down, and they're like having this whole dinner thing right there in the petrol station, right, you know, next to the, you know, next to the pumps. And then it turns into a whole scene like this, and he doesn't do this and that, and he's throwing things around and all that, and then it all wraps up. They get in, when the van's full, they get in and drive off. You know, so people will notice, because that's not the place where you would eat anyway, let alone this formal kind of, you know, like, you know, butler serving the Lord at, you know, at dinner, you know, or something like that. So everything has its place. Like that. That was the one you were thinking about? Yeah. Everything has its place. So is that good or bad that you know that reference? Does that make sense? So the whole Vedic system is designed that every individual can be situated in their nature and gain the taste that they're looking for and express their values, but not at the expense of anyone else's doing the same. So that means in your own life that has the particular freedoms that are there, but as you contact others, then you have to adjust that so that they you know, doesn't disturb theirs. They also adjust, and then there's interaction. So it's a very perfect system about the individual. So that individual subjectivity is always in consideration of everybody else's subjectivity. But the modern, it's about whoever we say we are, it's about our subjectivity, but everybody else can jump. You know? So it has nothing to do with actually a community or a social or that kind of thing. All it is just certain individuals feel they're not getting what they want, and then they rebel, so they do, and then no one else can get what they want now. So all it is who's the what modern system is, who gets what they want at the expense of everybody else. Mm-hmm. That's all. It's just whoever's got the position, the power, you know, whatever is their method. You know, the modern is by volume. And so then it works.
Yes. But one option is that everybody is peaceful and happy, everybody can see. By implementing one option, everybody is peaceful and happy.
Yes, everyone's peaceful and happy. Yes. Ascending and descending processes. The pratyaksha paroksha and the improper passive aparoksha methods are collectively called the aroha, or ascending process. So he's showing how it is, why it's wrong, because you're ascending from your position and trying to go up from there. The proper aparoksha, adhoksha, and aprakrita methods constitute the avaroha, or descending process, because aprakrita is Krishna's position. Then he comes down to adhoksija. Then that's a natural, that's how he pervades the world. And then he will come down to aparoksha if you connect it. Right? In other words, you see a connection to the Lord, then the position is there. So that means anything on the paroksha and pratyaksha position, or the anamoy and pranamoy, you have to connect it up to Dharma for it to be connected to the Lord. You can't connect it directly with the Lord, because Lord won't go that far. That's the point. He'll only go down as far as aparoksha. So if you want pratyaksha and paroksha to be connected to the Lord, you have to first connect them to aparoksha. Right? And then it will go up. Right? Then you connect it, it will get purified. If you connect it up to adhoksija, then you're using the jnana platform. And then you can see in the actual how the Lord's there through his energies. Right? But it's still him as God and everything like that. It's not actually fully subjective of the Lord himself. But when you get to aprakrita, that's about the Lord himself as a person. Right? So, yeah. So that's the method. So when we try to use these lower two levels and connect them to the Lord, then it's they're very ineffective. Because the problem is the bulk of what you're dealing with for the small amount of connection, you may not appreciate. If you can connect it, yes, you will advance. But the point is it has to be about seeing his connection to the Lord. Just like the example of the person seeing his drinking wine connected to the Lord. But it had to be about seeing the Lord. Right? And so therefore, in a few weeks, they gave up that habit and took up devotional service. Right? Because how did they hear about it? From Shabda. From authority, it came down. It didn't. It wasn't an ascending process. Right? Set. Two, by adoption of the ascending process, the perverse individual soul strives to realize his suicidal end by the positive and negative perverse manipulation of mundane experience gained through direct and indirect sense perception. Yeah? So, that when he's saying perverse individual means that we're bahirmukh, we've turned our face away from Krishna. So that's the perverted position of the living entity, instead of the natural position of being facing the Lord, right? So then they strive to realize the suicidal end. Either in your dealing on the aspect of karma, it's all going to fall apart at one point. You're going to die anyway, or eventually from karma, that doesn't work, you'll go into jnana, and that way then you'll try to get liberated. And then that suicidal position of getting rid of your individuality. And so then they're going to deal by the positive and negative perverse manipulation of mundane experience. Right? So in other words, what experiences you get through in the mundane world, then positive and negative, you're using piety or using impiety, and from that you're manipulating the material energy. And direct and indirect sense perception. So directly what you're getting, indirect what you hear from others. Right? Does that make sense? So direct sense perception is pratyaksha. Indirect is paroksha. You know, or pranamoy. Is that... So it's all based on that. The ascending is all based on what is my experience gained through the senses, directly and indirectly, either connected with piety or impiety. But the end game is going to be, I'm going to try to merge into Brahman and get rid of my existence because it's not working out very good. I didn't think about this aspect. They figured out that the part of the sunshade is bad and it will fall apart, so they're going to change it. Yeah, it's just one part. It's on both. It's the front sunshade on both sides. It means whatever's new, those are good, but the old ones, then those aren't good.
Sounds like they just ruined the whole thing.
Well, it's big. We've been doing it for a while, but it's bad, so it'll probably break quite quickly. I can't say it'll be done before the 8 o'clock class, but. Three, by the descending process, the soul is enabled to strive for the realization of the unalloyed service of the Absolute by the honest exercise of his unreserved receptive attitude to the initiative of the Absolute when he is pleased to come down to the plane of his tiny perverse cognition. Right? So when the Lord extends himself so that the living entity can therefore perceive the Lord, even though he's still within his conditioned state. Right? Right? Perverse cognition means conditioned state. Right? He is pleased to come down, means he descends, he enters into everything, he expands, right? Unreserved receptive attitude means he surrenders to the Lord. Right? So these are all things that we're used to, these sentences. Wow, even he's getting into it.
Translation of Bhaktivinoda Thakura rather than English.
And I know this is written in English.
I don't have that.
That I know of, it's in English. Otherwise, do you know any of our translators that would write like this? No. No. That I know of, he's written this in English. Because he's written this for the those who have gone through Western education. You know, the Indian aristocracy, the British, like that. You know, anyone else also. Because you can just use the Sanskrit if you're dealing with the pundits. What you see here is he's translated every Sanskrit word in a very definitive way that it actually says what it's there. Like Bhaktisiddhanta says what he talks about. When he says it in English, he uses exact terms. You look them up in the dictionary, which you have to, then you'll see is they exactly mean a particular thing.
Yeah, that's why you don't understand.
Yes. Yeah, so the one is very exact. Here he's using a little bit more poetic. You know, the Victorian kind of, you know, literary kind of classical, like that. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he used more directly exactly what the word means. Because here he'll use a phrase, because that's what you generally have to do in English. But there are sometimes words that exactly mean that phrase. But much of the time they're not regularly used. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would use those terms.
Most of those terms are still used in the scientific terms.
Oh, well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used, yes. Like that. Yeah, good. Okay. So in other words, the ascending process will always be inimical to the Lord. It always has a weak position. The descending is the actual position. Fruits or objectives of the different methods. One, the fruits that are realizable by the different methods of endeavor correspond to the particular method that is followed. Right? Means you get a result according to the method you use. Right? The idea of the end justifies the means. But the point is they'll use means that don't necessarily generate the result they want. Right? They have to match. So in the Vedas, you have a particular goal, they'll give you a method that actually will attain that goal. But if we speculate, we'll come up with ideas of what should be the process, you know, because it'll be what we like, but it doesn't necessarily get the goal you want. So even though one may say one's doing things for Krishna, it may not actually be, and so the result you gain won't be quite exactly what you expect. Right? If there's any intent to please Krishna in there, then from that you'll get that devotional benefit. But then from all the other aspects, the mixed part, you may get results that don't quite match what you expect to get. Does that make sense? Yeah. Two, the pratyaksha and paroksha methods aim at dharma, virtue, artha, utility, and kama, sensuous gratification. Three, the wrong aparoksha methods aims at pseudo-moksha, annihilation. The right aparoksha method aims at positive transcendence. The adhoksha method aims at bhakti, or reverential transcendental service of the Absolute. The aprakrita method has in view the realization of prema, or divine love. So that's because it's about the person. Means the adhoksha aims at bhakti, or situating yourself transcendentally so that you can be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Because in here we're making a distinction that we call bhakti what's below prema. Right? And then prema then is called by prema. So prema and what's above that, it was called by prema. Right? Does that make sense? The dawning of pure theism as opposed to hostility. Right? Because here we see there's an overlap. Because pratyaksha and paroksha, then it also includes dharma, which is typically the position of theism. But they may accept virtue, but not actually with God. Right? So they have morality. Because you see, it's generally those that are on the platform of pranamoy, it's all about morality. So it appears as if it's on that third platform, but it's actually not. It's not theistic, because it's they as a group define what is morality, right? Or we see is that they do worship the Lord, they accept the Lord, but it's only in as much as they can get the particular material benefit they want. It's not about, and as soon as they get, they're not interested in the Lord. So it's not actually about devotion to the Lord or bhakti. Mm-hmm. They may show devotion to get what they want. Right? So that's why he says this, donning a pure theism. Because otherwise it may even have a theistic attitude, but it'll be material. Right? But at least it's good, they accept that there's the Lord. But since it's not actually towards bhakti, that's the subjective nature of the Lord, is this devotional service, is prema. Therefore, then, it's not actually in line with the Lord. It has a subtle hostility to it. So, yeah.
Now, in that level, there is no spiritual guidance.
Yeah, no. Because you're not taking the association of the pure devotees. You may be taking association of others who are more advanced in the process than you in the, how you say, this arohana process. Mm-hmm. You know, the, how you say, what is it called? Ascending. Yes. Okay. One, pure theism begins with the first appearance of the positive desire for the service of the Absolute, who is located beyond the range of our sensuous activity. It involves a clear perception of the fact that all inferior activity is the deliberate practice of perverse hostility against the absolute supremacy of Sri Krishna. So in other words, when we see that whatever we do not connected to Krishna is not about Krishna, and only that, how you say, surrender to Krishna and doing things to please Him will actually bring us towards Krishna, then that's then the appearance of the first appearance of this positive, you know, pure theism. Because otherwise, theism, you accept God, but you're only interested in what benefits or the fruit of benefits you can get from it. Does that make sense? So it's not pure theism. Theism is there. You may accept God theoretically just because it makes things work nicely, or you actually accept that there is a God, but it's not as Him as a person. It's just Him as God. And so, since He's in control, you want to please Him to get what you want. But, at least, so you'll count them, depending on how you're looking at it, you'll count them as theistic. But here, now he's making the distinction that pure theism is actually the descending process. And even this mundane theism is still in the ascending process. Right? Two. The word adhokshaja, which is applied in Srimad Bhagavatam to the object of worship, refers to the fact that Sri Krishna has reserved the right of not being exposed to human senses. Because adhokshaja means He descends. So only when we accept that and appreciate that, then Krishna, we are able to perceive Him. He's always there. But that our consciousness, where he descends so that we can see Him. Right? Three, the theistic methods alone thus apply to the proper entity of the Absolute. Those who are in rebellion against the supremacy of Sri Krishna by the adoption of sensuous activity are prevented from all access to His presence by the operation of the Lord's deluding power, external energy. Yes, so the theistic methods, those are the descending ones, those are the ones that apply. Right? So now if someone's situated on the theistic platform, but mundane, all you have to do is adjust that into pure devotion. Then the platform is good. So therefore, if someone's then following the religious process, then it makes it very easy because the lifestyle is the same, or at least the principle of the lifestyle is the same. Does that make sense? Yeah. Four, the individual soul is always susceptible to being thus deluded by Maya, the limiting or measuring potency. The conditions for the practice of sensuous activities in the realm of finite existence are provided by Maya for the correction of the suicidal perversity of the rebellious souls. Right? So you have conditions in which you are in to practice the sensuous activities. right, within the material world. But it's for the correction of the living entities. That's why things don't always work out the way you want. Because then you, at some point you'll ask, why not? Because the soul is always consistent in wanting to be happy eternally. And the idea that you perform action and that gets you results is also there. And that you have knowledge, you have relationships, situations with which you work, that therefore you apply that. These are all inherent in the soul. So they're applying this into material nature. Why aren't I getting the result? Why am I being frustrated? So then you naturally ask, what's going on? Right? Atato Brahmajaga. What's the purpose? What's the... Then one takes up the method. So that's why Maya does things the way she does. So that you turn back to Krishna. Otherwise, you might get distracted. In other words, if it's an area where you can get distracted by that obstacle, it stops you from getting distracted. And if you're absorbed in the Lord, that obstacle doesn't distract you either. It just, you know, just continue remembering the Lord. So in other words, the obstacles aren't a problem. Right? They either remind you of the Lord, or they don't get in the way of reminding of the Lord.
So, yeah. We make the problem.
We make the problem, yeah. Yes. Yeah. 5. It is in this manner that a person who is averse to the service of Sri Krishna is made to proceed along the tracks of karma and jnana by the ascending process, so that he will gain the bitter experience of the practice of perverse hostility to Sri Krishna and to his own self. Because it's against the nature of the soul to act in this way. So then one asks and then one tries to adjust. 6. This world is inhabited by persons who are deliberately addicted to the suicidal course. They are unconditionally committed to the ascending process for sojourning in this realm of nescience. The method is further characterized by the hypocritical assumption of the validity of experience derived through the senses for providing progressive guidance in a quest for a state of perfect felicity. Right? So there's this idea that there'll be this perfect wonderfulness, you know, that everybody will just cooperate together and everything will be fabulous and everything will be so, you know, how you say, prosperous and hunky-dory and, you know, all those kind of good things. But it's hypocritical because they're thinking it's by their experience that's what gives the validity of the method. And that the results that they're looking for, that's going to be what makes things happen. So that's the authority. And as we see here, unconditionally committed, they're totally absorbed. And so then they what to do. So that's who's in the material world. So if you wonder why are people like this? I mean, that's what the place is. You know? Yeah. Don't be surprised by that. There's the world's weird. Be surprised that people are taking up devotional service and not acting weird. That's 7. The method of quest in which the truth himself takes the initiative is termed the avaroha or descending process. Right, so the truth takes himself the initiative. It means the other, we're taking the initiative, and you'll never get to God. It's like the Tower of Babel. It's not going to happen. Right? Or, you know, I think Hiranyakashipu tried to make, so many people have tried to make this, how you say, stairway to heaven. Right? But it just doesn't work like that. Does that make sense? Unless Niranjan Maharaj is singing it, yes. Like that. Pallad also does a good job. Sri Pallad, yes. The individual soul can have no access to the Absolute by reason of its infinitesimality. Dissociable marginal position and his own nature as an emanation of power. He can, however, have the view of the truth that the Absolute is pleased to manifest his extent to the plane of his tiny cognition. Right? So in other words, since he'll only come down to a certain level, you have to raise your consciousness up too. Because that means that theistic position, you have to raise your consciousness to there. That theistic position, then we see is Varnashram, that's the mode of goodness. Right? So that's why these are recommended, simply because then you can appreciate the Lord. That's then why it's done. Right? Yes? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.